Just having the browser on people's devices,
right.
And you know, the browser is very well optimized. It's written in Rust, maybe. I don't. If you actually think at the scale of our industry of Python, all of the servers that you need to have to power this software.
Django in Rust.
Do you know, we actually had this as one of our April Fool's blog post ideas, and currently it's written in Python. And we think it would make a lot of sense for that specifically to be written in another language like Rust. We know everyone loves to convert things to Rust these days. So far we talked about web. There's the whole AI space. Lots to say about the carbon footprints of AI. And when I say those three things, again, like the big elephant in the room is AI. I think we should expect way more transparency, not from open source developers, but from those businesses that build those models. That
did you know that every website has a carbon footprint? What if even the smallest code changes in tools we all use could have a big impact? In this episode, I talk with Thibaut Collat. He's product lead and engineering manager at Torchbox, product lead for Wagtail, and president of the Django Software Foundation. We talked about digital sustainability and what we can do to make the web greener.
Python developers are aware and care a lot about performance, but what about carbon footprint?
Yeah, good question. Well, when you think of the impact of your software, I think first of all, as a Python dev, you think of the users, maybe devs, maybe people that aren't technical, that the software supports, but you don't necessarily think about the impact on the planet. And I think that's because technology, software, you know, you don't really see where it runs. It's very intangible. But if you actually think at the scale of our industry of Python, all of the servers that you need to have to power this software and how much energy is needed both to create those devices and keep them on the internet, it's a lot of energy. And even though it might not be, you know, flying twice a day levels of energy, it definitely adds up. So yeah, when it comes to running Python code, you think of how fast it is, you think of the CPU, and that CPU needs the server and needs the electricity to power it.
Right. And is this question that matters to a lot of developers? Do you often get those questions, or are there any discussions, or you think this is a niche topic that people don't really talk about?
I laugh because you start with performance and every other Python dev asks, oh, should we be rewriting this in Rust? Because every dev also cares about performance, but very few people actually think about the carbon impact. And I don't think it's necessarily because they don't care. It's just they're not aware. When they think of carbon, they think of flying, maybe the car. Maybe if they have a company that thinks about those things, maybe they think of commuting, the office space. They don't necessarily think of the sites and apps that they build with the software. So to me, this type of thing where once people start to think about this, they realize that if their software is at quite a large scale, maybe the software itself is a bigger deal than all those other aspects. One example I can give you, Mozilla, the Mozilla Foundation, they manage the Firefox browser, and they were one of the first ones to report not just the carbon footprint of the Mozilla Foundation, but also of Firefox, the browser, as it's used on people's devices. And I don't know if you can guess how much the Firefox usage is of Mozilla emissions. It's 98% of their organization footprint. It's just people running Firefox. So when you start to think through the...
The browser and doing nothing there.
Just having the browser on people's devices.
Right.
And you know, the browser is very well optimized. It's written in Rust, maybe. I don't know. But even with all of that in place, it has a bigger energy footprint. And you know, it matters if you care about the climate, but also if you have it on your phone and you want a longer battery life, simple as that.
And what is the impact on of software and websites in general on carbon footprint? Because when talking about carbon footprint, we often talk about industries, flying, corporations. But I wonder, how much impact does software have on it?
Yeah, for websites specifically, there is this quite well-established methodology called Sustainable Web Design, SWD, and it divides websites' emissions in three categories. It considers the servers, how much energy they use, the users' devices that display the website's pages, and the network in between. And you realize that when you start to crunch through the numbers, that all those things matter. And It's actually the user's devices that have the highest emissions, because if you think about it, when a server creates a page, it can cache it and display the same page for 1,000 people. But when someone opens the page, they're going to do that once, maybe twice, and so on. So that adds up pretty fast. For Django, for example, I'm involved with the Django Foundation as the president this year. And I estimate there's on the order of 500,000 to a million Django projects out there. And those projects, the average footprint is on the order of a ton of CO2 per year. So you can clearly see how fast the numbers add up, even though people don't necessarily think of Django as energy intensive.
So many websites that are run on Django, if we improve Django itself, then the overall impact would be very big. And what is the current state of carbon footprint in the Django ecosystem?
The current state is, I think, first and foremost, we have to have more developers invested into this and thinking about it, and more companies as well. There are quite a few like very big Django users out there that have a quite clear climate commitment. I think of people like the NHS in the UK, the biggest UK employer. They have a very large site with billions of page views per year, and they have climate commitments. So it's really crucial for those people that the tech they select meets those commitments. And when it comes to open source contributors, I think it's worth saying that they definitely have a clear stake and opportunities to reduce that footprint. So, you know, when you think of individual actions, there's activism, but there could also be contributing to a project like Django and reducing its footprints by improving its performance.
And what are some gaps in Django or some areas for improvements?
Oh, there's so many. I mean, you know, I think it's still quite early days for this industry. I think the biggest gap for starters is just having those methodologies to measure emissions. So far we talked about web. There's the whole AI space. Lots to say about the carbon footprints of AI. But one thing that's really clear is that it's very easy to measure. And I think people should start to ask for those measurements a bit more.
So how is it measured? If I have a website somewhere and I deploy it to cloud or anywhere, how do I measure carbon footprint of my website?
The simplest way to get started, if you want like a kind of approximation, is to measure the weight of the pages. And the sad truth is the weight of the pages across the web is going up and up and up every year. And that's really just, you know, more heavyweight pages are slower to load on your own devices. So there's that to get started. Then if you want more precise measurements, you're going to look at measuring the CPU usage of the site, measuring the memory use, how many servers are needed. And then you start to investigate also, not just like how much resources, but also where in the world those resources are used. So, you know, if you have a data center that's powered by renewable energy, it's going to emit much less carbon than one powered by gas power plants.
So going back to Django, what are some future plans about it? Because you said there are lots of things that can be improved. Do you have any roadmap or any plan to improve it? Or
my wish, my dream would be to get the whole Python community to align on this and make it happen. For Django itself, I'm actually part of another project called the Wagtail CMS, where we did produce a roadmap. So Wagtail is just one of many Django packages. Wagtail powers on the order of 20,000 sites, including the NHS one. And for Wagtail, we spent some time creating a roadmap of 10 items, which we think are the most important to make progress on this. And those 10 items, roughly speaking, I believe there is 6 that are improvements to Wagtail itself. There is the rest that are about awareness in the community. So something I'd like to see for Django in particular, we have ways to make Django much smaller and still very useful. You know, these days people really like frameworks like FastAPI that are much smaller in footprints, not necessarily in energy use, but just amount of code. And I think Django could address that need better and lower its footprint at the same time.
And what about languages? Different languages have different footprint, right?
For sure.
And Python is one of the worst ones, isn't
yes.
it? Does it mean that we should consider using more other languages?
It's a good question. I definitely think that, you know, if you do data processing, it makes sense to convert some of that code into C or Rust we know everyone loves to convert things to Rust these days. But the thing is, we already know that because we already care about improving performance, about reducing costs. But I think when it comes to reducing the footprints, there's lots of room to do things in Python still. So if you want an example, one I really like is image processing and reducing the size of images. Of course, you're going to use a C library to do that. That's very well optimized. But the integration from that to Python, we have to have it written in Python. And having those integrations with those newer formats for images is the type of thing that makes a difference.
So you're not planning to rewrite Django in Rust?
You know, we actually had this as one of our April Fool's blog post ideas. And we thought it was just like slightly too, you know, it might feel quite real for people. So I guess for Django in Rust, we actually have concrete plans. I can't say like plans as in we have any commitments, but definitely interests. I don't know if you know, when it comes to serving Django, you combine it with a web server. There's one called Granion that's written in Rust and has a fair bit more optimized footprints than others. And another thing is the Django template language currently is written in Python. And we think it would make a lot of sense for that specifically to be written in another language like Rust. So Lily Foote, one of Django's steering council members, she's working on that. At the moment, I believe it's more of a side project, but definitely one that we could see moving to Django core in the future.
So what are some other tips how to reduce it except of Rust?
I mean, you know, I don't know if in your personal life, some people spend lots of time about this. You know, there's the reduce, reuse, recycle mantra. So definitely this is the right mindset in my opinion. And I think I would add one before in our case, which is measure, just to have a sense of where any change might move the needle. And when we say reduce, I think it's really important to be clear that we're not necessarily asking people to completely scale down and stop doing technology. Just thinking of where the tech is most useful, focus on that. And the bloat that just makes your device run slower, that makes your battery drain faster, like remove those bits.
And how can we raise awareness? Because if you go to conferences, if you read blogs, this is not really a topic for mainstream tech media.
I think it's starting to get mainstream in the context of AI, actually, because people really see the buildup in data centers and how the big cloud players, you know, they had those quite clear net zero commitments that are starting to get watered down a bit. And I think that's actually a space where the awareness is raising. But I guess to your point, in the Python world, I think what actually works is aligning this with performance concerns. So I mentioned images, things like the AVIF image formats. It has SEO benefits. It makes your users really happy if the sites load faster. So lots of good reasons to do this. And the carbon, lower carbon is just one of them. I think the other thing is things like Python performance improvements. So in Python 3.11, I believe, we had quite good performance bumps across pretty much any Python project. When we talk about those things, also talking about the reduced energy use, which again is good for costs in the servers, but also the climate. And I don't know if you follow with our latest 3.14 Python developments, there's free threading work underway. That as well could have a big impact. So I think combining that work with benchmarks on energy use go a long way.
And if I would like to learn more just to get started, or if I were a maintainer having my own project, where can I read about it more?
My favorite resource by far is, you know, in the Python world, you come for the tech and you stay for the community, I think. And there's a community for software practitioners who care about climate. It's called Climate Action Tech. It's an online community that's very easy to join, completely free, and you're just in this server with like-minded people to chat about those different topics. And you're there with the experts and the people who are interested and who share the right resources. So Climate Action Tech would be my go-to. And I think the other one I would recommend is lots of people these days, they care about AI. There's excellent reporting on the carbon footprint of AI from Stanford, which I think people would find really interesting.
And if I would like to contribute somehow, is there anything that I can do?
I would love for us all to coordinate more. And in my mind, the best way would be for you to find those folks on the Climate Action Tech, get in touch with them, and discuss for your specific projects what moves the needle. So right now, if I think of contributing, there's this, I don't know if you know the W3C, who do accessibility standards. They're also working on a sustainability standard. And I think they could really use feedback from web devs. And being able to be part of those standards is also a big opportunity for people. It's quite a new field. I think there's a lot of room to grow your career in that. So yeah, Climate Action Tech, reviewing those standards, giving the feedback, and just connecting with people.
And you mentioned that there are some standards, but is there any way how can we make open source developers or in general developers accountable for the footprint of the tools they create?
Accountability, that's a tough topic, Mia. I don't know if we can definitely make people accountable because, you know, when you put software out there as open source, you don't necessarily think a lot about any commitments to your users afterwards. I think it's definitely worth thinking of what you can do, but I would say it as in more think through how people will use the software and try and set them on the happy path. So to me, if you want to start to move totally towards accountability, what's the most helpful actually is just transparency and sharing the results and sharing the numbers. So for Wagtail, for example, we try hard to publish our footprints, not just of our like project organization, but also the Wagtail sites out there, publish that on a yearly basis. I would expect the same from Django because we have quite a serious foundation. And eventually I'd love to see the same from Python as well. And when I say those three things, again, like the big elephant in the room is AI. I think we should expect way more transparency, not from open source developers, but from those businesses that build those models that change our society.
And is there anything that we can do in regards to businesses, big tech, corporations, cloud providers?
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, understanding the benefits of those providers and of the tools they provide and of their AI models, but also understanding the, you know, the impact on the planet, the society, and I guess asking for more, raising your standards. When it comes to AI, for example, I try and push people towards local models because it really forces them to be more aware of the, I guess, how big of a server you have to run them and also how much energy it takes to run them. And once you have that kind of feedback loop of actually wanting to reduce those numbers, you naturally do it.
Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me.